This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Today we're talking about a reconstruction project on the North Split interchange connecting I-70 and I-65 in Indianapolis. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name when you're calling and where you're calling from, and also a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. We're joined now by Mallory Duncan, who is the Communications Director of the East Central District for the Indiana Department of Transportation. Welcome to the show, Mallory.
Hi, Taylor. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, it's good to speak with you again. So when did the plans for the Indianapolis North Split interchange actually begin, and then when was it completed?
Yeah, so this has been a, you know, years-long process. We've done a lot of different things to make sure that this plan is right for Indianapolis, and we're really excited to get it started. It feels like we've been talking about it for years, which we have, and now we're knocking down the door on construction. So very excited to get that, you know, underway and to start this project. So we started in 2018, but basically this whole entire project, you know, has gone on for decades. So the interchange was built in 1968. And since then, there hasn't been a major reconstruction project. So that's kind of where our starting point was. Some of you may remember we did a reconstruct of the main line between the north and south splits. That's right in there in downtown Indianapolis, where we see 65 and 70 split off, like you mentioned earlier, Taylor. That was called Hyperfix. We did that in 2003. But other than that, we've targeted specific ramps or bridges. We've done some repavement and some patching in the North Split, but never a reconstruction since it was built. So that is on our plate right now. We're looking at construction starting here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Can you take us back a little bit to why this was needed, actually, the interchange?
Yeah. So obviously 1968, that's when it was built the first time, with a plan to kind of, you know, when we build interchanges, we build them with a 40 years in mind of capacity. And obviously we are exceeding that capacity. It's been over 40 years. A lot has changed in downtown Indianapolis. You know, it's grown, it's thriving, it's great, you know, down there. And we want to, you know, increase our assets with that growth. And that's why, you know, this project needs to happen. There's a couple of reasons. The biggest thing is that safety factor. You know, this is our second largest interchange in the whole entire state. It's in the middle of the state. It's in Indianapolis. And we see a really good number of crashes in this area. I'm sure all of you have heard about them, you know, as we go on week to week, and safety is our number one priority for all Hoosiers on the road. So safety is a big deal in this project, and we're happy that it will fix a lot of those safety issues when it's over. But also we're gonna replace and repair around 40 deteriorating bridges in that one little North Split section. You know, you don't need an exit to have a bridge. Like, they're all over the place. And they're deteriorating. It's the end of their life cycle. Like I said, this interchange was built in 68. So it's time. And also, this will reduce congestion too. Like I said, the interchange is at capacity. And we want people to be able to move through into, out of downtown easier and quickly and be safe while doing so. So those three things are on the top of our list, and that's why we need this project.
Yeah, it's a big project, and it's an area that is very well traveled. Can you take us through the process of what it did and took to make plans for this reconstruction? And was it a long process?
Yeah, a lot of our projects, people might be surprised to know, it takes longer than you think. You know, we gotta have it go through a designer, and in this case, it's a design build project. So we you know, bid it out, and our the designers are coming in and kind of designing how we're doing this as far as maintenance of traffic and things like that. So that's been a really cool thing as well, because we're doing it as we go. And but like I said, we've been in the public involvement phase for at least 3 years, and planning the project for more than that. So it's a really long process, and there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, you know, when designing and trying to figure out, you know, what would be best for this interchange and how we can do that, you know, quickly, as quick as possible, safely, while also doing it as fiscally responsible as we possibly can. And that's kind of what we did. And that takes years. And now the public will see, you know, the construction part of that. So behind all these projects that we do, whether it's the North Split or, you know, I-69 finish line, obviously that one's taken a decade to do and see. The construction is not the beginning. The construction is the end for us. So that's why it's very exciting, and we're glad to get it up and running.
You talk about the public involvement. I assume that you did talk to the neighborhood groups and the businesses that would be impacted by the project.
Yeah. So, you know, this public involvement was very, very extensive. Like I said, it was about 3 years. It included all the neighborhood groups, all of the businesses downtown. It includes lots of stakeholders downtown, and also the people that maybe don't live downtown or in the area, but do travel in this interchange. You know, we really try to get this information out over the past 3 years to every single person that would be impacted by that. And it's millions of people. So that was a lot. And we received a lot of great feedback, and we're excited to move forward.
Yeah, what was some of the feedback that you got?
Yeah, so we, you know, over 3 years, obviously, we have taken a lot of comments. We've taken a lot of questions. And what comes out of it is just a really exciting mix of, you know, what this interchange could be for the people in the area. Obviously, we had all those safety concerns, and that was echoed by the public. And we've addressed those. So a lot of it won't be, we call it a weave. Like if you're traveling on, the 65 and you have to get off the interstate, there are some movements that are very dangerous. People have to go across, 4 lanes of traffic, or vice versa on 70, if you're trying to get off the interstate. So, we really addressed that. And with congestion comes safety issues as well. So that was a big deal to people that we heard of too. But also we're excited about the connectivity that, you know, we're working with the neighborhoods. And I know that we're, you know, improving that connectivity between these neighborhoods, and people are going to be connected to each other through trails, through the Monon, which later I know we're going to talk to Ethan about, and I know he's done a story on that, so he might want to expand on that one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're just looking to connect the neighborhoods to downtown and to each other, which we think we've accomplished in this plan. And also, you get not only that connectivity with trails and for pedestrians, for bicyclists, for anyone who wants to rollerblade, you know, anything they want to do. That's one thing, but also lighting in the area will be much improved as well, to kind of help with that. And just aesthetics and things that people could vote on in our public involvement process. It got them involved, and that was something that was important to us. But also, we're going to have a chance for local artwork and more information coming on that soon. So people, you know, we're excited to be able to see the community within this project as we move ahead.
Yeah, a lot of good things in the part of it. But, you know, during, obviously, I mean, people have concerns. Was there big pushback against some parts of the original plan of the reconstruction project?
Well, you know, everyone always has, you know, comments or questions, and we try to, you know, answer those as best possible. Obviously, mobility is something that people really, really look to. And I think we've addressed all of that when we're moving into construction. So we know that the construction phase will be a pain for some people as you're driving through, but we can talk about that and the amount of mobility that we're going to keep open during construction. And we think that after, you know, the 2 years of construction on this interchange at the end, it'll be worth it for everyone.
Right. There's always that initial and probably during of being inconvenienced by any kind of construction that you know, if it impacts your drive.
Yes. I mean, we think, you know, there's a lot of things and steps that we've taken to kind of minimize that impact. You know, we're talking to downtown stakeholders about, you know, people possibly working from home. How can we alleviate some of this traffic? How can we, you know, do that? You know, how, you know, we've moved truck traffic. And another really cool thing that we've done is partnered with the city of Indianapolis to do a lot of signal improvements in the downtown area and intersection improvements. And that's going to be very integral in this whole construction process. So yeah. Basically, without going, you know, too much into it, you're downtown and you are trying to find a different route around construction. We know people will do that throughout the whole construction process. But to mitigate those traffic impacts, we're going to touch 489 traffic signals in and around the downtown area.
Yeah.
So they're going to be synchronized. A lot of them will have access at our traffic management center. So if on a certain day, you know how construction goes, someone decides to go one way and there's a lot of followers, right, and it's getting a little more congested than normal, we'll have a way to kind of alleviate that a little bit.
All right.
And like I said before,
well, Mallory, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. And we'll talk more about plans for the reconstruction of the North Split Interchange in Indianapolis. Again, I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be back in just a few. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. We're talking today about the Indianapolis North Split Reconstruction Project. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and also on Twitter at All In Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from. You can call us at 866-476, and that North number is 3881. And you can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. You just search for the All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your questions or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. We're joined again by Mallory Duncan, the Communications Director of the East Central District for the Indiana Department of Transportation. And also we'll be joined by the India Star reporter to talk about a new article on a fourth leg of the North Split Interchange that was actually never built. So welcome back to the both of you.
Thanks, Taylor.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Most definitely. So, Mallory, you were talking a little bit about before we left, just some of the things. Can you pick up of where you left off on that, on what some of those things we're going to look at?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sorry. It's very exciting. You know.
Well, no, I understand. There's a lot going on with it.
There is. I was talking about a partnership that we have NDOT and the city of Indianapolis, that we're kind of preempting this increased traffic that we will have during construction for the North Split. And because of that, we have gone out and we are touching just about 500 traffic signals in the city to try to make sure that we can ease congestion along some of these routes that we know people might take during construction and the different phases over the next couple of years. So Not only are we touching those signals, making sure they're all timed correctly, making sure that we have access to kind of change them a little bit if we need to synchronize them as this construction continues. We're also doing some spot improvements in intersections around the city to help, you know, alleviate some of this traffic that we anticipate will be on city streets.
All right. Well, we're joined now by Ethan May. He's a transportation reporter for the Indy Star. Hello, Ethan.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, most definitely. Thanks for being here. In the last segment, Mallory mentioned the addition to changes of the North Split interchange itself. There's also going to be changes to the Monon Trail. Can you tell us a little bit about what changes we'll see there?
Yeah. That's what I think is one of the cool mm-hmm. things about this project is that it won't just help drivers. It'll also help trail users. So for folks who are familiar with the trail, you'll know that the trail currently runs underneath the interchange, which, as you could imagine, may not be the safest thing to do during a major construction project like this. So during the construction project, there will be a detour route that will sort of follow along the south side of the soccer park that runs near the interchange. And that'll connect to College Avenue right there, which will then take trail users safely underneath the interstate and then connect them back to 10th Street, where they'll then have access to the cultural trail and other entities down there in downtown Indianapolis. So that detour will be nice, obviously, during construction. And pending agreement with the department and the city, there's a chance that detour will remain permanent. So even when the trail underneath the interchange reopens, which will be wider than it is right now, that detour could also still exist and give you yet another option for taking that trail into the heart of the city.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, yesterday you published a very interesting article about earlier plans of the North Split connecting to a fourth interstate. Can you tell us more about the original plans for the interchange?
Of course. So if you look at satellite images of the interchange as it exists today, it's an upside down T, right? But if the state highway commissioner of the 1960s got his way, the interchange would have been a plus sign. It would have had a leg up to the north. It actually would have run through that soccer park that I just imagined. And it would have run through the heart of the city, essentially, going through a bunch of neighborhoods up until about 38th Street, where it would have connected with near the state fairgrounds with Fall Creek and then eventually Binford. And then it would have headed to the northeast to connect to I-69 up in the northeastern part of the city. I'm sure there are people listening right now who work in Hamilton County, in Fishers, in Castleton, who would maybe like the idea of a route that would take them directly downtown without having to go around the circle of 465. This convenience, however, would have come at a cost because that interstate would have run through very established neighborhoods. And a lot of the people who lived in those neighborhoods would have suffered from this, not just by having their neighborhood split up by the interstate and maybe having their homes destroyed, but also because that neighborhood did not have a high car ownership rate at the time. So it's something that, while it sounds convenient, it would have caused some pain for many Indianapolis residents. And those residents stood up against it and said they did not want it. And eventually, in 1980, the city decided that it was something that maybe wasn't the best thing to do, and it voted against it.
Yeah, I'm one of those in Hamilton County, and I think the convenience would probably be a good idea. But a fourth interstate, I mean, that seems, I mean, is that practical?
I think there's a lot of different ways to look at that question. If you look at the interchange today, it's large. Like, again, if you look at the satellite maps, and that's because it was built having the plan for that fourth leg to that new interstate that was never built. So, mm-hmm. It could have been practical physically because back in the day, NDOT did build this interchange planning for that interstate. And you can even see ramps today that just sort of end. They just stop in some grass or they just stop at a hill. And that's because those ramps were built in anticipation of this extra leg and this extra interstate that never happened. So one of the interesting things about this reconstruction project is that it will shrink that interchange. You know, mm-hmm. Right now it's about 12 city blocks wide, which is just huge. And that's the new interchange will be much more compact. It will not have such wide, long curves as you make ramps from one part of the interchange to the next. And it'll be more compact. It'll be smaller. And that should not only make your commute easier, hopefully, if it's more efficient, but also, you know, just provide a bit more green space.
Yeah. How do you feel that people were being informed? Do you think they were being clearly informed of what the plans were and are?
You know, I understand that there was a lot of feedback taken by NDOT. So I was not covering transportation at the time. So I can't speak too much into the coalition that spoke out against the changes to the interchange. What I can say, however, is that so much of what we saw when plans for this reconstruction were happening was very similar to things that we saw back in the 1980s and 1970s and even the 60s when these initial interstates were running through Indianapolis. So some of the calls early in this reconstruction process were from people saying that the interchange should be buried, essentially, should be lower to the ground or even underground to sort of hide it and make the city look a little bit nicer. People were making those same calls, asking for that same thing back in the 1970s when I-65 and I-70 were coming downtown in the first place. So, you know, history repeats itself is a saying, but it really is true in this case as well, because just like we heard, you know, like in 2018 when planning for this started, back in the 70s when I-65 came down, and even when this never built interstate was being discussed, people were having those same discussions. And I find that very interesting.
Yeah. When you were putting together your story, did you run into any complications or roadblocks on just trying to get all the information out there?
I did. So the committee that largely put the nail in the coffin of this interstate that never was built, I tried to reach as many people as I could who were on it at the time. And unfortunately, you know, that was 40 years ago. So unfortunately, many of those people on the committee are no longer with us. So I tried to track down the people who are still alive and who could still speak to what that effort was like. I went through dozens of clips, not just from the Indianapolis Star, but from the Indianapolis News and the Indianapolis Recorder, which provided a good perspective of those people who lived in the neighborhoods that would have been destroyed by this interstate. So there were certainly challenges, but I'd like to give thanks to the State Historical Society that helped me with their archives. And, you know, it was a bit challenging to report news that happened 40 years ago, but I enjoyed the process. And luckily, I was able to find the information I needed.
And kind of looking at it, could the construction of that interstate maybe have fixed some of the congestion and the traffic that we now see on the interchange of I-70 and I-65 is heavily congested? Do you think it would have helped at all?
I spoke to a traffic engineer who was involved in this interstate planning back in the day, and he claimed that it would have helped, that it would have provided that more direct route and taken stress off of eastbound I-70 heading out of downtown Indianapolis, and taken stress off of I-465 northbound heading from 70 up into Hamilton County, which it sounds like you drive every day and I drive every day as well. Mm-hmm. So that direct route certainly would have helped. In my research, I found data showing that these interstates, when they were built in Indianapolis, were almost immediately at capacity, and that, you know, obviously they've been expanded and improved many times over the years since. But having this extra leg certainly could have helped with that congestion. But I think it's important for us to not ignore the human costs that would have been had if that interstate were built.
When you look at transportation, specifically here around central Indiana, how do you think that, you know, just covering, how do you think that we compare to other cities with similar areas?
You know, that's a really good question. I wish I had sort of data off the top of my head that I could use to answer it. I grew up in the St. Louis area, and something that is different from the St. Louis metro area and the Indianapolis metro area is how many interstates do come downtown. So in St. Louis, I believe there's three or maybe even four that come inside of their beltway, their version of 465, and connect to the heart of the city. Whereas in Indianapolis, only 65 and 70 come into the heart of the city. Now, there are different ways of looking at that, right? You could say that is inconvenient for people who live outside the city and need to come downtown, that it would have been nicer to have more legs inside the city, just like this I-165 would have been. Mm-hmm. Or you can look at it and say that not building those inner legs protected Indianapolis neighborhoods, because unfortunately, Indianapolis neighborhoods were already damaged by the interstate system, but it perhaps could have been worse if more interstates were built like this 165. So I think there are two sides to that coin that are important to consider.
Yeah, and you talk about the impact again, and I want to kind of go back a little bit to the Monon Trail that we talked on just a little bit, and the reactions from people that will be impacted by that. What was some of the feedback there?
I have not heard too much feedback, to be honest with you, from Monon Trail users, but I know that it's something that a lot of Hoosiers value and a lot of city residents like to use. So I think that it's appreciated that there was a plan put in place to have this detour during the project, and that people who wanted to ride the trail from the northern part of the city or even Hamilton County could take the trail down and still reach downtown Indianapolis, still reach the cultural trail, and despite this massive two-year construction project, could still have access to those things that they enjoy.
And then I want to ask you, what about high-speed rail? We ever going to see that? Do you think we'll ever see that when we look at transportation?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? So
you know, it's something that, yeah, I mean, I've been covering for a long time, and it never seems like it's going to happen. But yet, you know, I know a cost is a big factor.
Cost is certainly a factor. I was reading a study a month or so ago about just how expensive it is per mile of track, and it's just ridiculous. Somewhere, you know, like hundreds of millions of dollars a mile, if I remember correctly. But the reason why I must be careful with my response here is that, mm-hmm. of course, in Indiana, this becomes a political question as well, because mm-hmm. the state legislature has control of rail projects. And perhaps some of my political colleagues would be more adept at answering this particular question. But I understand that you know, there would need to be legislative action for rail to come to Indianapolis. And I'm not sure about the current appetite at the State House for that sort of action to be taken.
Yeah, who knows? Well, you published a great article. Do you have any plans for a follow-up or anything additional as we follow this project?
Absolutely. As construction gets underway in the coming weeks, as Mallory said, I'll definitely be keeping an eye on what impact this project will continue to have on drivers as they go to and from downtown Indianapolis. I know Colts games are still bringing people downtown, not as many people, but they're still bringing people. Some people still are commuting downtown while others continue to work from home, but I'll continue to follow traffic impacts and make sure that people know how to get where they need to go easily. In addition to that, I love history. That's part of the reason why I wrote this story about this interchange or this interstate that was never built. So I'd also be interested in doing even more reporting and learning about how the city's history was changed by these interstates coming into the downtown area and separating neighborhoods. And another sort of interstate never built story that I would like to work on over the coming months is there's supposed to be yet another interstate downtown that sort of created a box. It would have been on the west side of downtown and would have connected the city in more of a square instead of kind of the sideways U that we see today. So that's something that I'd like to cover, and hopefully I get some time to dive into that in the coming months.
Yeah, when you cover history, there's always seems to be some fascinating things that pop up that you didn't realize. I know that's the case when I look at some things. You know, you look back on some of the history. It's very interesting.
I think it's fascinating. And as I said, I'm not originally from Indiana. I grew up in the St. Louis area. So it's been really fun for me to come in here and try to learn as much as I can about Indianapolis and get to know it, not just as it is today, but how it got to what it is today. You know, as someone, I've lived on the northeast side since I came here 2.5 years ago, and I've always wondered why there wasn't a more direct way to get from downtown to Castleton, to Fishers. And this story helped me answer that question and learn so much about why Indianapolis is the way it is.
How long did it take you to put together?
Oh, man.
Sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah, I started reporting on it in July. I have not been working on it constantly since then because, unfortunately, there's been a lot of other, not just transportation news, but I've been pulled off of transportation for other pandemic stories as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been reporting on it off and on since July, but I have, you know, more than 8,000 words of notes and like almost 50 newspaper clippings. And like I said, I have worked with the Historical Society and other archives to get primary documents. So it was a long time in the works.
All right. Well, great work on the article, and we'll definitely look forward to more stories from you as we follow this transportation story. Very important one.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think it's important too, and I'll continue to work on it and bring that stuff to IndyStar.com.
Sounds good. Ethan May is a transportation reporter for the Indy Star. And thank you so much for your time again, Ethan. We appreciate it. And Mallory, we will be back after a break with a new guest. It's a representative of the Rethink 6570 Coalition. Again, if you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and that can be found at All In Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that is 866-476-3881. Also, don't forget, you can send us some voice messages without making a call by using your smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It is free and very easy to use. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. That is Vox Pop. I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Back now to our discussion on the Indianapolis North Split reconstruction project and its impact on neighboring communities and the drivers who use it. As always, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from. Just give us a call at 866-476-3881. We're joined by Charlie Richardson, a representative of the Rethink 6570 Coalition. Thank you for being here today, Charlie.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Can you tell us what is Rethink Coalition and a little bit why it was formed?
The Rethink Coalition was begun about 2.5 years ago, shortly after the start of the consideration that we heard about in the earlier segments. It's a nonpartisan group of residents, civic leaders, neighborhoods, businesses, professional organizations, cultural destinations, urban planners, transportation planners, architects, and landscape architects who've devoted a lot of time over this planning phase for the North Split to turning a necessary massive reconstruction project into an engine for better connectivity, as we heard in the earlier segments, a more livable and just urban center and inclusive economic development for central Indiana for future generations. This is a really big deal, and it's an important element of what the city of Indianapolis and central Indiana is going to be the next 50 years.
Well, as the name of the coalition suggests, you want people, since this is extremely important, to start kind of rethinking the Indianapolis I-70, I-65 North Split interchange. What specific changes and improvements does the coalition want to see here on the North Split?
The North Split, of course, is the beginning, but it's not the end. The North Split segment is a part of the whole inner loop, and I hope we'll be able to talk about the ongoing thinking that the Rethink Coalition and the Indy Chamber is doing for that whole inner loop. But the North Split part of this, the coalition was in significant conversations with NDOT, with the city, and with all the groups I mentioned earlier about ways that we could make the North Split better, eliminating the weaves, reducing the overall footprint of this elevated highway that's outdated, eliminated planned 20 and 30 foot embankment walls, adding and preserving green space, incorporating multi-use trail loop that Ethan mentioned earlier, and improving bridges and adjacent landscapes, making this a better element of how Indianapolis lives, works, and welcomes people who visit. That was the focus, and it was a constant set of communication and inputs over the last 2.5 years to get to where we are now.
How do you feel about the input that you received?
I think it was absolutely necessary. And I would say, Taylor, that I hope that you, WFYI, and all of the voices in our community can bring a focus to this over the next several years. The input over the last 2.5 years from where the suggestions were at the beginning show how terribly, terribly important this is. The elevated highways are nearing the end of their useful life. They are all over this country. And other cities are having the kind of discussion that we must have to figure out how we do better than was done 50 years ago during the height of so-called urban renewal. We need to be thinking about our neighborhoods. We need to be thinking about the people that live here, both now and into the future. And so I think this is a critically important discussion, and I think the last 2.5 years of input has been very, very important as we not only NDOT begins this construction, but as we think about the future of the whole inner loop.
Well, what do you think of the final plans that they came up with for the reconstruction?
Much improved from the beginning. And I like to think that the Rethink Coalition, but certainly many, many others within NDOT, within the city, within the neighborhoods, within our business leaders, all of the people that I mentioned at the beginning, all of those had things to say about how we can make Indianapolis better, how we can be more inclusive, how we can build a more equitable city, how we can basically strengthen the urban fabric. We are the capital city, and we've got to look at examples of what other cities are doing so that we can do the very best we can for the next 50 years of the foundation of Indianapolis. And this is the foundation because it goes right through the heart.
Is there any specific details, though, that you're not happy about with this project?
I think two things on that. It's much improved, and we have applauded NDOT for taking into consideration the input they got from the Rethink Coalition and from so many others to improve it. I think we in the Rethink Coalition would have been much happier if the highway had been recessed, as other cities are doing. For example, Cincinnati. There was a mention of St. Louis earlier, and we've all watched the cap and the stitch improvements in downtown St. Louis in certain segments. There are certain things that could have been done better. But all of the improvements that I mentioned a minute ago, those are improvements from the original design. And I think now that the North Split is ready to get going, we can turn our attention to the whole inner loop. And we and the Indianapolis Chamber Foundation have a study going on right now by the international firm ARUP that will give us some good information about what the future of the whole inner loop ought to look like. And I think that will begin a community conversation along the lines that I mentioned earlier about how we can learn lessons from the past. We can catalyze inclusive economic development, enhance neighborhood connectivity, the sort of thing that Ethan just mentioned, and drive job creation and improve quality of life for Indianapolis for generations to come. And I think the conversation about the North Split has been a good beginning point. And I applaud the media and others for bringing us bright spotlight to this so that we can figure out together what our pathway forward should be.
Are you pretty confident, though, and feel good about what is going to be happening as far as maybe not looking so far down the road, but short term?
I am optimistic. I think our city and state leaders understand the importance in this time of inclusivity, of looking at past mistakes and building a future that is better for all of our citizens, those who live, work, and visit here. I enjoyed listening to Ethan discuss the work that he's done to sort of look into the past. I've been following very closely Living the Legacy series done by the Indiana Historical Society as a part of the city's bicentennial. We can learn a lot from the decisions that were made in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and we can do better. And I think this gives us this conversation that we've been talking about today will give us a way to approach the future in a way that will be far more constructive and put us in a better place. This could be improvements in the inner loop and perhaps considering a recessed highway or other ways of approaching our infrastructure and our transportation. This could be an economic engine for decades to come, and we ought to put it on the drawing board and look very, very carefully at it. And I am confident that our civic, business, philanthropic, neighborhood leaders, everyone in the community will start that conversation and do it in a very, very positive, constructive way.
So you feel like you have been listened to and considered as everything has been planned out?
We do. And it's always the case that things could be done better. We made suggestions and they were listened to. There were certain things that we would have liked to have done better. And we've simply got to move on now and move to the next phase. And that's the whole consideration of the inner loop, of which the North Split is one part, a significant part, but just one part. Now we need to look at the whole thing and say to ourselves, what should Indianapolis be over the next 50 years?
What is your answer?
We need to knit 200-year-old neighborhoods back together. We need to consider ways that we can make Indianapolis and central Indiana a more desirable place to live, work, and visit. We need to think about inclusivity and livability and focus on our urban center, not just transportation, but the whole infrastructure around transportation and livability around the structures that we build. And I think we'll do that. We have examples from other cities now, because as I said earlier, all of these elevated interstates are reaching the end of their useful life. And all of these things are being thought about afresh as better ways of doing things. And as Mallory said, and as Ethan said, let's look at all those things so that we can do better than we did before, but also take into account what other places are doing to improve transportation, livability, and urban cores.
What's going to be your next step for the coalition? What's upcoming for your group?
Yes, we're all anxiously awaiting the results of the ARP study. We expect that the results will be out in the first quarter of 2021. The Indianapolis Foundation and the Rethink Coalition will then be starting a community-wide conversation about the future that will take into account whatever information and data is produced in that study, and to begin a community-wide conversation about that. We want to make sure we take into account, as I said earlier, the lessons learned from the past. Mm-hmm. We also want to take into account the possible economic development and the enhancement of neighborhood connectivity. We need to take into account job creation and attraction of talent and quality of life. And I think the ARIP study will be sort of a springboard into that conversation in 2021 that will be very productive. We now have time to plan for the Interloop. And now's the time to start that. As the North Split construction begins, now let's think about the other parts. And we have time, data, information, best practices from other cities to do that logically for the benefit of all Hoosiers and future generations of Hoosiers.
Well, you're very passionate. I know you've been involved since the beginning. So I know you've helped work with neighborhood groups and, you know, take their feedback years ago in the 70s. I know this is very personal for you.
It is very personal. I was mentioning to someone yesterday that I remember as a young kid right out of college, I worked in the office of Mayor Richard G. Lugar and went out to community groups in 1969 and 70 and listened to what they were saying about the terrible destruction of their neighborhoods, largely African-American neighborhoods, in the pathway of this elevated highway. And that was then, this is now. We have an opportunity to take those lessons into account and to do it better this time in a way that will be a real benefit for Indianapolis and central Indiana for many years to come.
How can people find out more if they want to get involved?
Yes, good point. I'd encourage all of your listeners to go to the Rethink Coalition website, which is rethink6570.org. Have a look at the information on there. As I said earlier, I applaud you, Taylor, for shining a light on all this, having a community voices talk about this as we move forward. Terribly, terribly important that the whole community be involved.
Most definitely. Well, we thank you very much for all the work that you're doing and have done, and keep us updated on how everything is going. I want to really thank you for taking the time to give us a little bit of background.
I'd be delighted to do that. It's very important to our future.
Well, thanks so much. Charlie Richardson is a representative of the Rethink 6570 Coalition. Well, thanks for joining us today. Our producers are Drew Dahlin and Micah Yason. Also, Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer, and also he composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any really past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcast. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. It's at All In Indiana. I'm Taylor Bennett.